Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
I'm Claudia and today I'll be speaking to Laura Ashurst, who's calling in from her home in North Yorkshire. When Laura was diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, she was told that she had 2 years to live. 11 years later, she's running her own successful blog called Living with Hope and Secondary Breast Cancer. We'll be chatting about the effect that storytelling has had on her and what led to her speaking on stage in front of an audience of hundreds last year. Laura, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome and thank you for inviting me to take part in the podcast.
Could you take us back 11 years to when you first found out that your breast cancer spread? What happened at that point?
I'd been experiencing some lower back pain and that had been troubling me for a little while. So I was actually referred through my GP to a spinal consultant and he arranged for me to have an MRI scan. It took a little while. The whole process was about 6 weeks, I think. And it was actually him who gave me the news that my back pain was the least of my worries. And that what he could see was a little bit of wear and tear on L4 and 5, but that the MRI scan that he was looking at showed shadowing in the lungs. Mm. Now, when he gave me that news, I'd attended the appointment alone because my husband Paul was working in Japan on business. And I genuinely didn't realise that the scans that he was showing me were anything to do with secondary breast cancer.
Right.
I was actually a little bit disgruntled because I'd been sitting in the waiting room waiting for him to come off the telephone. And I was a bit annoyed that I'd been kept waiting. But in actual fact, what he told me during the appointment was that he'd been on the telephone trying to contact my breast surgeon because he wasn't quite sure how to share the news with me. So I was kind of, well, I was very shocked. I didn't really understand what he was saying to me, but the time difference between the UK and Japan meant that I couldn't speak to Paul immediately. So I left his consulting room, went into the car park and I rang my sister-in-law. She's a senior diagnostic radiographer. Now, that phone call obviously must have been very difficult for her to hear, but she actually kept her real opinion to herself, knowing that I was on my own. So what happened after that was a week or so later, December 2007 it was, my husband and I attended an appointment at the hospital and we were actually told the formal diagnosis that I had terminal secondary breast cancer. And even though I'd had two separate primary breast cancers, I was completely unprepared to hear that my breast cancer had spread to the lung and pleural lining and that it was deemed incurable. So my first, well, naive question now, I know it to be, was, can you cut it out? Because in my limited experience, that's what happens with breast cancer. Mm. It gets removed with surgery. And when the answer came back as, no, sadly, we can't, my next question was, how long have I got to live? So my oncologist told me that I had approximately 3 to 6 months if I chose not to have chemotherapy. And up to 2 years with chemotherapy. She actually also said days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months. And it was only years later that I really appreciated what she was actually saying, which was, in fact, there's never any way of really knowing.
Yeah.
Because as you know, secondary breast cancer is such a diverse disease. The best oncologist in the world can't really predict how a secondary breast cancer is going to respond to treatment or not. And so my diagnosis really brought home to me the individual nature of this disease. It's so diverse.
Yeah. What did that feel like when she first said you could have up to 2 years?
Well, with my husband sat by my side, we just looked at each other and we were totally and utterly broken. There aren't really any words to say how I felt exactly, except that, you know, I was 40 with two small children. Jack was almost 6, Megan almost 10. And to be told that you're going to die from cancer is just an unimaginable situation that you find yourself in. It was actually 2 weeks before Christmas And that whole experience of being given a terminal diagnosis and then having to walk back into the oncology waiting area with Christmas cards and decorations facing us, it actually gave it a totally surreal and even macabre feeling to it, actually.
I can imagine.
And my feelings really were just utter disbelief, shock, fear, and also anger, because as a primary breast cancer patient, I was totally, totally unprepared for the fact that up to a third of people who are diagnosed with primary breast cancer can go on to develop the incurable form of the disease. And I still really feel frustrated about that now. There's so much work to be done around education and raising awareness about the incidence of secondaries.
How much did you know about secondary breast cancer before you were diagnosed?
I didn't really know anything. You know, one of the wonderful things about being involved with the breast cancer community, I'm now friends with somebody called Jo Taylor, who founded ABC Diagnosis. People like Jo have campaigned tirelessly, and they talk publicly continuously about the importance of people being made aware of red flags at the end of their primary breast cancer treatment. She's got this document called an infographic that she designed, and it's got on it the symptoms associated with breast cancer spreading to, well, secondary breast cancer spreading to five main areas of lymph nodes, brain, lung and liver, and bone. And when I was diagnosed, I had no idea that the breathlessness that I'd been experiencing for 6 months prior to my diagnosis was anything to do with secondary breast cancer. I thought it was really a sign of me being an unfit, almost 40-year-old. And it's really crucial that people are made aware that any of those kinds of symptoms need to be followed up. Breast Cancer Care, as you know, do all sorts of work to raise awareness and to provide practical and emotional support for people diagnosed with secondary breast cancer. And this is absolutely crucial.
And we have sort of done big campaigns in the past around secondary breast cancer and making sure not only that awareness is raised, but that the support is there.
Exactly.
In hospitals as well, once people are diagnosed.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something that I've been very much a part of with the secondary, not second rate campaign. And it is so, so important, because lots of people up and down the country still don't have the adequate levels of support that they need to cope with this kind of diagnosis.
No. So just coming back to your own diagnosis and how you felt, when did you actually start writing about it?
I didn't actually start writing until it was January 2009. At that point, I'd started to respond really well to the aromatase inhibitor drug, letrozole. And that drug has totally surpassed any expectations that my oncologist had about its ability to control the spread of my disease. And I've been on that ever since. But at the start of 2009, I was utterly consumed with the prospect of dying, leaving my husband and children without me. And to channel some of that hurt and regret and sadness about my situation, I started to write in a journal. I've got about 60,000 words that only a handful of people, including my husband, have ever seen, but they're words that I hope one day I'll feel brave enough to show to other people. But I actually left that little project behind because it became too overwhelming for me.
And 2009, so was that 2 years after you were first diagnosed? So
it was more or less just over a year, because I was diagnosed in the December 2007. I'd spent most of that year on treatment, and I was also then exposed to the letrozole drug. So December 2008, that had been a year. So the start of 2009, it was just kind of 13 months after my original diagnosis of secondaries. So I left my writing behind, but over a period of time and with a lot of help and support and encouragement from my clinical psychologist, Annie Hickox, I was encouraged to start writing again about my thoughts and how I felt. And what I found then that was putting things down on paper that were troubling me and also putting things down on paper that were going well actually proved to be really cathartic. And I found that this is really a great form of therapy for me.
And when did you start sharing it publicly on your blog?
I didn't start my blog until the summer of 2017. So it was a long time before I actually thought or felt brave enough to press publish on a blog and show the world some of my words. But it just, I'd found that by writing things down, it was starting to help me focus more clearly. And it also was helping me to stop internalizing all of the emotions and feelings that I had. And in actual fact, by writing things down in a strange way, it helped to reduce the amount of time that I was spending dwelling on my cancer. So I wondered, and I started to think about how sharing some of my thoughts and feelings and my personal story with other people might be helpful to others. And although I felt that I was going to be exposing some of my vulnerabilities, it might prove to be beneficial to other people experiencing similar things. And it was that really led me to start to think, I'd like to start a blog.
Yeah, and you're right. There are two benefits to sharing a blog. I mean, like you said, writing for yourself is an incredibly cathartic experience and a form of therapy, which you definitely found it was. But then on the other side, for people reading it, people being able to read someone else's experience and see someone else's vulnerabilities, and I guess see that they're not alone in how they feel.
Yeah.
That's a huge amount of support.
Yeah.
And that sort of ties into the whole huge community of women and men with breast cancer on social media and online, which you're very much a supportive part of. What's it like to have that group of people sharing their experiences online?
Well, I haven't experienced anything like it, really. It is incredible to think that you can talk to people from all over the world about your diagnosis and about your experiences with breast cancer. It's such an incredibly supportive network, and it just makes you feel that you are much less isolated and alone. You can share your thoughts, your ideas, your opinions in a totally supportive environment. And I just find it incredible that I can talk about what I've been going through with people on the other side of the world, and of course in this country as well. And you actually make online friends are so supportive and understanding. Because, you know, I'm very lucky. I'm surrounded by close family and friends, but lots of people in my situation don't have that immediate support network around them. And so the people and the friendships that they make online really do play a big part in their day-to-day ability to cope with their diagnosis. So it's been a wonderful experience, really. I've met people from all over the place, and it was through sharing my experiences online that I found out about the blog and learn event that you put together with Breast Cancer Care.
Yeah, so this was an event that Breast Cancer Care put on in 2018 called Blog and Learn, where women who'd had a diagnosis could hear talks about how to share their stories through video and audio and through writing. But just before we come back to that, actually, which I will do, Laura, I wondered, when you're talking about speaking to a huge community and finding that support online, and for many people they may not have that support at home as well, but I also just wondered, is there something, or are there things you can speak to people online about that maybe you don't want to share with friends and family who maybe haven't had your experience or your exact experience?
Well, that is a really important point, because you know, the whole issue around secondary breast cancer is that currently it is a disease that isn't deemed curable, but that can be treated. So when people receive that kind of diagnosis, their life is turned completely upside down. And I know firsthand how it affected my life. And some of the things surrounding that kind of diagnosis, people feel it's very upsetting to talk to people in your life about it. It's an outlet for perhaps some of the things that you don't want to share and speak about with friends, for example, who haven't been through the same thing, but that you can get that level of understanding from people online who've also had a secondary diagnosis as well. And I think crossing that bridge between a primary diagnosis and a secondary diagnosis is just so, so daunting. In my area where I am locally, I don't know anybody else personally who has a secondary breast cancer diagnosis. I know a lot more people through sharing my experiences online. And so it's helped me feel completely less alone. I've got my partner, Paul, my husband, who I can talk to about all sorts of things, including my fears and my concerns. But I'm very fortunate in that situation. Some people don't have that kind of supportive environment around them. And that's what I've found, is that there are some topics and subjects that people want to talk about that are just so painful that they're worried about causing and hurting and creating pain with the loved ones around them.
Yeah.
So this is an avenue that people can go down to share those kinds of thoughts and views.
Yeah. So in a way, even though it's a public space and somewhere where you're essentially speaking to strangers, it's also a safe space to share things that you might be worried about talking to other people about.
Absolutely. And I think what has to be understood is that people have very different views and opinions about things. People will talk about things that you don't necessarily agree with, but it is something that I've learned that, you know, we're all individuals and we all approach a situation like this very differently. And it's important to keep a sense of perspective and get other people's opinions on board and listened to as well. So that's been a big learning curve for me.
Yeah. 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 So that, just going back again to Blog and Learn, where we met for the first time in person,
yes,
I think.
We did. Last summer.
Last summer. So yes, this was an event we held, and we had a talk from Sarah Lianage, who set up her blog Ticking Off Breast Cancer, who's also very supportive in that sort of online breast cancer community. And for you, Laura, particularly, that event marked the beginning of quite a big adventure. Can you talk us through that?
Well, one of the people, as well as lovely Sarah, who I'm now in touch with regularly, again, another example of connecting through social media and through breast cancer care, as well as meeting Sarah, I also met Jude Habib from Sound Delivery, who, as you know, she was one of the hosts of the event. And
So Jude runs Sound Delivery, is a company that supports people to tell their own stories rather than people telling them for them. So she gave a brilliant talk on using audio, which
she did.
Laura,
she did.
Tell us more about.
And so Jude asked for a volunteer within the audience to come and stand at the front of the group and talk into an iPhone for about a minute, just to demonstrate how easy it was with a piece of software downloaded into the phone, how you could record somebody's voice and then upload that with an image of them. And that was a good learning point for us all. But I did feel as though I connected with Jude by doing that. And she was very kind enough to contact me a few weeks later to invite me to take part in her event called Being the Story, which was something that really was life-changing. This event gave me an opportunity to meet people from a totally broad range of backgrounds who had each faced really different, diverse, difficult challenges. And to be able to be in their company and to listen to their stories was just hugely empowering for me. And in turn, they then heard my story, and we stood on a platform on a stage in front of over 200 people and really bared our souls. And the empathy and the level of support in the audience in that type of environment, in the Being the Story environment, was just so supportive and uplifting. It really did have such a profound impact on me.
Yeah, and I was there in the audience, and I completely agree. The atmosphere was absolutely incredible and just so supportive. And I think that was also because people were standing on stage and talking about incredibly difficult or very inspiring things as well, and very true things about themselves. And I think when someone gives you their own truth and allows you to see that, it's very humbling and also very connecting in a way. And maybe that's what reading someone else's story online gives people too.
Well, I think as well, what I gained from taking part in Being the Story was that I felt that there was this sense of hope that was woven into everybody's stories about people facing different and very, very difficult, challenging situations, but things that they'd done to try and alter their outcome and improve their situation. And by talking publicly about it, didn't do anything to take away the impact of their experiences in terms of how they were having to cope with their life on a day-to-day basis. But what it did do, the whole room was shared with this message of hope, and it really did help me on a psychological level to deal with some of my own internal challenges. And equally, by us sharing our stories, the audience could take our stories of hope back out into their own lives. So the whole effect was just really, really wonderful.
Yeah. So in what way do you think it helped you psychologically? Was that the process you went through, or...?
Because I felt that, well, certainly within being the story, and also in my telling my story in other ways, I feel that I've exposed my vulnerabilities a lot. And although that has in some ways exposed me, I've also been very much personally strengthened. It's I feel as though my inner courage has developed, and I'm coping much better on a psychological level. And it's actually starting to make me feel much more resilient. Really telling your story and sharing some of your really difficult experiences that you've been through with an audience is really therapeutic. It's quite, I was very nervous, but the support that we received from Jude and the team at Sound Delivery was incredible. And we each knew when we stepped out onto that stage that we were surrounded by just the love and support in the room to tell our stories in the best way that we could.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it sounds like it was very empowering for you.
It was totally empowering, and it's really, really helped me to just hang on to the hope that I try and carry with me every day. And some of the other people that I met when I took part in Being the Story, I'm still in touch with now, and it's wonderful to see them progressing and going on to do really wonderful things. And again, you know, social media helps us with that connection. We can see what everybody's doing. The team at Sound Delivery are regularly updating us with what everybody's up to. And it's been like being part of a really big family. It's just been wonderful.
Yeah, it sounds like a big community that you've joined.
Yeah.
So what is the power of storytelling, do you think?
I think sharing a story, and, you know, we all have a story within us. We all have different things that have happened to us and that have challenged us in life. We've all got a story to tell. But by being able to share that story, we can learn from one another. We can look at things with a different perspective. We can look at somebody's situation. We can compare it to our own. You inevitably are going to do that. But I think the single most important thing for me about storytelling is, and my telling my story, is that this whole message of you're not alone. There are other people in the world going through what you're going through. And what you're going through, by telling it, and speaking it out loud, even if it only helps one other person, it's been worthwhile actually being open and sharing that experience. That's how I feel. People have contacted me to let me know how me speaking publicly has helped them. And in turn, I've been able to communicate with people who listen to their stories has really, really been therapeutic for me. So it works on so many different levels to be such a wonderfully supportive experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now, thinking if any of our audience, anyone listening, wants to or feels inspired to start sharing their stories, how would you suggest that they could start? Because not everyone likes to write, or I guess there are different ways of sharing your story, but what initial steps do you think someone should take?
Well, one of the things that I started to do, and again, this was something that my clinical psychologist encouraged me to do, was to jot things down in my own little private diary, or some people like to call it a journal. And I found that to be really helpful because, as you say, not everybody feels comfortable sharing their story publicly. And this is a totally private way of getting thoughts from your head onto paper. And it can just be a little bullet point list of how you're feeling. I found personally that looking at those thoughts on a piece of paper really helps me to sort out some of the muddled things that are going around in my mind. And looking at them in black and white actually makes them seem a bit more manageable than a whole load of words racing around in your head all jumbled up. I've found that doing that in a very small way actually is quite helpful in quieting in my mind. It stops me overthinking and catastrophizing about things. So the very simple act of just writing a few things down daily, not even in full sentences, just a few key bullet points about how you're feeling, or even about things that have gone well or haven't gone so well that day, is a really good way of just starting to analyze the thoughts that are in your mind, and looking at them on paper helps you to sort of work them out a little bit better.
Yeah, and so you're starting to process them
exactly.
More easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Laura. It's been an absolute pleasure as always.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to speak. It's been wonderful, Claudia. Thank you.
Oh, and I'm sure, I hope that from hearing your story today as well, that a few of our audience might feel inspired to start jotting down their own thoughts or to sharing their story too.
Thank you.
If you have had a secondary breast cancer diagnosis, you can find support through the Breast Cancer Care Living with Secondary Breast Cancer monthly meetup groups. These are held all over the country and are facilitated by a counsellor, and that now includes one in Middlesbrough, where, Laura, you're from.
Yes, I am. Middlesbrough is the town that I was born in.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted to say that Breast Cancer Care are starting a secondary breast cancer support group on the second Wednesday of every month at 11 a.m, I believe. And those details can be checked on your website. This is something that has been needed for so long in the Teesside area. And I'm thrilled. I've lived with a diagnosis of secondary breast cancer for 11 years. And it really means such a lot to people like me that there is now going to be a supportive group where we can attend, talk through our thoughts, our feelings, our concerns, share that in a really supportive environment. And I'm just delighted that Breast Cancer Care are going to be offering that for us in the area of Teesside.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. So yes, you can find more details about the Middlesbrough meetup group and also other meetup groups all over the country on our website.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.